call is now being recorded.
Yes. Hello?
Hello, Julia. I'm just now setting up to be on YouTube on my live stream.
Oh, nice. I'm sorry. I came a little early this time, so, like...
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't want my list yet, but...
I did want to share that one thing about the call yesterday with the political campaign that...
Yeah.
But we can do what's on your list first and then get to that, because I know you have a list, so we can get to that.
Yeah, so for the list was school walkouts, but that can also, you know, we can talk about the campaign person who called you and the way campaigns are organized and funded, and
yeah.
And then we can talk about the school walkouts, because they're kind of related to this.
Yeah, they're a little bit in tandem, I think, at this moment, right? It's a kind
yeah.
of
and then I have that you and I wanted to talk about cultural appropriation, the concept of that.
Yeah.
And then I thought we would also include something about Elizabeth Warren and President Trump and DNA testing for both of them, right? We were going to talk.
We're going to talk about that because I think that would be very interesting. I think if you're going to throw it out there or say that you're Native American and you were offered, well, we'll get to that. But
yeah,
anyway,
right. Okay, and then what else do I have? Oh, well, since that sort of leads to the fact that a lot of people are supportive of Native American rights, I wanted to talk about hunter-gatherer cultures in general and how hard it is in the modern world to have a large enough range to where you're able to live that lifestyle. It's a great lifestyle, and it's,
it's
to me, it ties in with problems that chimpanzees and bonobos also have. They need a very large range in order to live their lifestyle, and we're depriving them in the wild of that because it's all about territory for all of us. And this even fits in with cattlemen who need a range for their cattle to graze on. And right now we're having trouble with all of that.
Mm-hmm. Where they're not able to have that amount of territory. But then bigger corporations, they're going to raise cattle, but not in the most humane ways. Whereas the
right, yeah, because they're going to do it in a way that is very area efficient. But actually, the way the cattlemen used to do it is better for the cattle. It's better for us when we eat the cattle, and it's a more traditional lifestyle, which is it mirrors. You know, it's not exactly the hunter-gatherer lifestyle, but as we go along, we're getting further and further from the idea that we could have, you know, different lifestyles, some of which require a lot of land to live them.
Yeah, true. It is unfortunate because we love this idea of, like, the open West and being able to wander the land and just being able to, like, camp. Well, that's another thing I was going to say. Like, you can't legally camp in a national park unless you have a permit. And this homeless family that didn't have any money, they were camping in a national park, and they were cited for that. I don't know how they were hurting anyone. Like, how were they hurting anyone? They were just sitting their little camp. Yeah, I don't know. But
right. No, that's exactly it, because we're told – you know, you shouldn't, this is public land, so you shouldn't do anything here. But you know what? If it's public land, then anybody, any member of the public should be allowed to do something there. You know, it should be the opposite. So we used to have the town common or the common grazing land or the common, you know, forest or whatever, where, you know, it didn't belong to any one person. So in a sense, it belonged to the public, but that didn't mean that the public had to stay out. That meant that anybody could go in.
Yes, anybody could utilize land. That's actually where the term, like, common
ground. Right, exactly. So now, when they had this, like, the government was shut down, they told us we couldn't go into the national parks. Why not? Why do we need the government to go into the national park?
We don't. And, you know, people still went anyway. Don't tell me, like, oh, like here in California, I'm sure everybody still went to the national park. By the way, the problem that we had with the national park wasn't that. It was, like, people who didn't respect the rocks and these kids who were spray painting on the rocks. That the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something else.
Yeah.
So. But, like, I don't know why people can't be.
Right.
But anyway, continue on.
Okay, so, yeah, why don't we start with your, so you had a phone call from, who was it?
It was a Democratic, I think some sort of Democratic campaign committee. I didn't vote for the Democrats last time because, I mean, there are some Democrats I will still maybe vote for in California, but I voted for Gary Johnson in the national elections, and there were some libertarians and some independents here in California I also voted for. I changed my party,
mm-hmm.
but for some reason I'm still on the Democratic roster, and they still call me,
yeah.
but I didn't know that they had been calling me, like, every day for months. And they called me yesterday saying, oh, in Pennsylvania there was a win for this one, you know, representative, and do you want to donate money, and it can be matched anonymously. And they were telling me how they really need money, and then they were starting to go into this thing, like, I felt like, I know, like, people get real impassioned, but it almost kind of felt like propaganda. I never remember, like, political solicitation sounding like this before. It was just so, like, they were trying to convince me I needed to give them money. So
what did they say they were going to do with the money?
Oh,
it gave it
more, just help more Democrats win and get rid of Trump. I don't know how that's going to get rid of Trump. I didn't vote
for
Trump.
No, I don't think that's an option right now.
Yeah, it's not even an option. But the thing that just bothered me about that was I feel like, well, this is just me. I feel like they're always wanting to keep us on edge. They always want it to be Democrat versus Republican. And especially with the Democrats, I don't know what the Republicans do because I've never been part of, like, part of their campaigning. But they lately they're calling you more ardently, asking for more money, telling you how we're going down this scary path and how we need to make sure Trump's out. But how is having more Democrats going to make him out? There's not a presidential election for several more years, and it just seems like that's all they ever talk about. And it just irritated me a tiny bit. Plus, I don't live in Pennsylvania, and they wanted
yeah.
me to give money. And it was a Pennsylvania number, by the way. I looked up the area code. It's a number in Pennsylvania, and I just don't think that's right. If they want to call their own constituents, but why
sure.
are they calling me in California trying to tell me, oh, that they won and we need to make sure more Democrats win? You just want money from me because I used to vote for Democrats, and I didn't like this.
Yeah, but actually they're asking you to meddle in an election
yeah,
that isn't
that
even your state.
Yes, that was the part that did bother me also, because I do not live in Pennsylvania. It is a little bit of, I don't want to say gerrymandering, but it is influencing an election out of state. Like, you're having out of state
right.
people pay, and I don't think that's right. Like, the election should be subsidized within the state. It should, it's not right. And I was a little irritated with her, and I told her, she goes, well, why do you want to be taken off our roster? And I said, well, I didn't vote for Trump because they asked me if I did, and I said I don't agree with him at all, but I don't really like the way that you guys treated Bernie Sanders. You didn't
right.
treat him right,
yeah.
and you acted like everybody was supposed to back Hillary, and you're still always talking about that, and now you're making everything about how the world is very scary unless we give you more money, and it's just like this constant back and forth. It's like I said, it feels kind of like there's no common ground anymore. You don't really have anything positive that you're calling me to tell me except for how we need to somehow stop Trump. And I don't see how that representative is going to stop him. There's not another presidential election for 4 more years. That was just what I was feeling at the moment. I was a little irritated because I don't
yeah.
live in Pennsylvania. It is influencing their election. I don't live in that state. And I just told them, just take me off your call list, please.
Right. Yeah, that's the right thing to do. I get emails from you know, people who say that they are working for Trump, and I never, you know, I didn't vote for him. I never supported him. And they keep sending me emails, and it's like, oh, that Make America Great Again hat is, you know, 10% off. Do you want to buy it? You can have it.
Like, who cares?
I mean, yeah.
I'm sure the hat maker makes a lot of money. Actually,
right.
You know, the thing I really don't like about the elections on Zazzle, Cafe Press, Redbubble, people are so, they're not, I don't want to use the word ignorant, but a little ignorant. They think that when they're buying all that election, like, stickers and hats, that those people really care about them. But there's people that make all the different political parties, and they make a lot of money during the election.
Yeah.
It's very lucrative. So I feel like they're pushing this Democrat versus Republican for merchandising. That's sort of what I feel like. That's the next thing, like hats on the Republican side and shirts on the Democrat side. I feel like it's to kind of push merchandising, because you can sell these things to people. They can make a contribution to your campaign. You don't really have any transparency about how this money is going to be used. And they have an anonymous donor that's going to match. Like, and they gave me some amount, like $218. Like, they were wondering if I could donate $218. And if I could, this secret anonymous donor would match me at $218, which was a very interesting number. But
yeah, where did they come up with this stuff? But, you know, if they want to sell me shirts, I want to sell them shirts. I've got shirts, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I like your shirt. That's. People
well,
back in-
right, and I know that you sell shirts too.
Yeah,
so we all sell shirts.
Yeah, we all sell,
you know.
But we actually have meanings. Like yours have to deal with your novel, which have some real themes. They're not. It's not like with these people on Zazzle where they don't really care who you're voting for. They just make political everything, and they pump it out like all the time. That's why I actually wanted to be on the Amazon merch shirt, but I still haven't been approved, because a lot of people make money selling things, but then I didn't get approved for some reason. But no,
I don't know why. I got approved, but then they're very funny, you know, so they approved me for a short sleeve shirt. Then they said, oh, now you're approved for a long sleeve shirt. And then just around Christmas, when I thought I would be making all these sales, they ran out of shirts. I don't remember which it was, but like you couldn't order them.
What?
Probably because their supplier ran out on them for the long sleeve shirt, I think, which is what people want around Christmas time.
Yeah, exactly. But that's inefficient.
Yeah, so I wouldn't worry about not having been accepted. It's very strange.
Yeah, the only reason I was interested is because I know there's a lot of people, they got in earlier on, and they're still making a lot of money with Amazon merch, but they're under a different system. They can have more than 10 shirts, and for them, I guess, it's okay. It's working out because they have their niche, and it's similar to Zazzle, but they're selling more things than Zazzle, but who knows, maybe some of that stuff is not their property. It might... People sell pirated things on Amazon still, and Amazon still hasn't resolved all that. But yet the new people coming in, it's very strict for them, and they have to
It's very, very strict. I have not made any new shirts since Christmas because I was so disappointed with what happened during Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, that was supposed to be the sale time, and it didn't quite work out.
But
anyway, so...
I know, I kind of deviated there.
Yeah, that's okay. So, yeah, they shouldn't be calling us or asking us to make donations. And frankly, I wish that money were not involved in elections at all. I don't see why we have to pay money.
Yeah.
We each get a vote, right?
I know what the money goes to. It goes to these campaigns, and there's people who work on the campaigns, and it's kind of like a social thing. And by the way, I don't like to sign those petitions when people are – I don't know if this happens to you in Missouri, but in California there's always somebody standing outside of Walmart, Target, every big store with a big pile of petitions. And I found out they get paid like so many cents per person that they get to sign those petitions. And just like, really? Like, I'm kind of tired of that too, because people – I feel like these political campaigns want money because all the staffers get paid and it's kind of fun to run. But can't we run campaigns more efficiently where it wouldn't require money? There's got to be a better way.
Yeah, if we had more people that were actually just involved and people were invited to talk in front of other people and just spread the word, then I don't think we need all this advertising. I mean, even on Facebook, you know, why advertise for a campaign when you could just tell all your friends? If only Facebook wouldn't keep you from telling all your friends, you know, getting to them. So right now, Austin Peterson is out of Facebook jail. He got out early. They didn't say why. He said because reasons. He said he was so glad he would now be able to share memes with his father and his other family members because apparently that's all they want him to be able to do.
So he can't post anything else? Like if he wants to post something political?
Well, he's afraid to. I mean, it's not that he can't, but he doesn't know what the rules are because they won't tell us in advance what the rules are about why it was that as part of his campaign he was raffling off a gun. Obviously, it was legal. If it had been illegal, he couldn't have done it. The police would have come and gotten him.
Yeah.
So clearly he was doing something that was perfectly legal, and Facebook decided they didn't like it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of silly. I mean, you don't have to participate in this, but Facebook, I guess they decided. So is he thinking about, like, going on a different platform to advertise?
I don't know. I see a lot more libertarian-type people on Steemit, but he's not libertarian right now. He's Republican, so I don't know what he's going to do. He needs to reach a lot of mainstream people.
Yeah, maybe he'll just have to do it with TV. Maybe he can, some of the politicians here that they go to, like, different organizations so they see, like, they have coffee talks. Does he do that? Does he have, like, coffee with, like,
oh, he goes all around, and he goes to the Lincoln Day events, and he talks to people. Yes, he does. He travels all around the state and talks to people.
Well, good. It sounds like maybe that's more efficient, but it's unfortunate that Facebook isn't really a place where you can run your campaign. I don't want to own a gun, but he's legal, he's fine, it's the Second Amendment, and I don't know how he was hurting anybody because he wasn't breaking the law. So if he wasn't breaking the law, I don't see what Facebook had a problem with his campaign. It just doesn't seem right to me, but
right. Right.
Because it's political, I think, is what it is. Because weren't we talking about what it turned out that one, that they were saying how all those Russian ads were, like, influencing our election, but it turned out they were just really cheesy ads, like the Army of Jesus, where it was a picture of Jesus.
It was so silly. I mean, who would believe that? I mean, it would say, oh, if you want Hillary not to win, then like this for Jesus, you know, or something like that, right?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It was like, I'm like, is this even real? Like, I almost thought it was a joke or something. Like, maybe some people really believe that. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, if the Russian intelligence community thinks that's going to work, then they've got some problems understanding the American culture.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Plus, I don't. You can't really control how people vote, and we don't. Do we really want to restrict like what is posted on the internet? Because people can post some really ridiculous things, and they did it. Okay, there were some people on Jill Stein's page. They posted some stuff that was just like way out there. But I thought we still had the First Amendment where, yes, sometimes people post information that's not accurate, but aren't you supposed to do your research and figure out what's correct and what's not? Or for yourself, I mean, come on. Like, they were posting some ridiculous conspiracy theory, but I really didn't care because that wasn't going to influence how I voted anyway. So, interesting times.
Yeah, I think I've got some hate people on my channel.
I
was
that.
Actually talking to somebody who this is interesting, but she's related to me, and
really?
Not closely related, and I don't know. But she's actually into genealogy, and she found me, and but now I told her she saw my post on Facebook with regard to the school
yeah.
walkouts. And anyway, so I told her come and watch this live stream. We speak softly.
Yeah.
You know, you might change your mind because she was on the other side of the gun issue. And, oh, my goodness, she got very venomous. And she said, oh, we might speak softly, but really we're killers. It's like, I'm a killer? Really? Because I'm talking to Julia?
That's crazy. You could tell her this, like, well, I think, you know, I don't own a gun, but I used to be part of her camp, not, like, that extreme. But
uh-huh.
I thought, oh, my
yeah.
God, everybody can't own guns, and oh, my gosh. But I started thinking about it over time because one of my friends that I went to high school with, she likes to go hunting, and she was in law enforcement, and she's not hurting anyone. She follows the law, and,
mm-hmm.
like, she... Like, I don't understand how other people exercising their right to bear arms hurts me personally if I don't want to own a gun. And I don't think that it's as big of an issue as it's being promoted to be. I feel like they're always picking an issue. They want to create this strife, and there's a bottom line behind it. You can sell more merchandise. You can keep people very divided. You can keep people from talking about some real issues in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But also, too, if you ban guns, what about what's happening in Mexico right now? This is another thing that helped me to kind of change my mind on that. Guns, from what I've heard, are not legal in Mexico, but look, with the drug war, more people are being shot all the time in Mexico because they're still having illicit guns on the market. They just find black market guns. So you ban the guns, does that mean people could make a gun on their own?
That's right. I mean, how do we ever get guns in the first place? People used to always do it that way before we had the Industrial Revolution. So,
yeah. So,
yeah.
Personally, I don't want to own a gun. If you don't want to own a gun, just don't own a gun. And I'm actually okay. Like, you might not agree with me on this, but if, like, a school decides they don't want guns on their campus and the school culture feels that way, that's fine. Maybe some schools don't need it. Maybe people don't agree with me on that. I'm okay with that, like, if a restaurant doesn't want a gun in there, that's okay. But if it's your own personal house, like, it's up to you.
My feeling on that is a little bit different from yours, but it's
yeah.
not that different. My feeling is if it's a public place where you have to go, you know, like
yeah.
a public school, so
mm-hmm.
some of the people might want to protect themselves. They might be scared. A child mm-hmm. might be forced to go to school. Let's say his parents can't homeschool him. And there is a mandatory education law, so he has to go there. He doesn't have the choice of just staying at home and not going to that place. So I think in a place like that, everyone, and I don't mean just some people, but all people should be allowed to carry guns because they don't have a choice of not to go there. But on the other hand, if I want to go to a particular restaurant, it's a private place, they don't want guns, they have every right to tell me, leave your gun at the door, okay?
Yeah.
And you can check your gun out. You know, even on the airlines, they used to have that rule where, okay, some airlines didn't want you to have a gun on the flight. And if it was really the airline and they said, okay, give it to the stewardess at the beginning of the flight, and at the end of the flight, your gun will be given back to you, that's okay.
Yeah.
But to have a federal law that says nobody is allowed guns and you can't go into the airport and you're going to be disarmed when you go there. So, you know, when I see a school that has metal detectors before you go into it, I feel really unsafe there.
You feel like it's not a safe environment because somebody still could bring a gun into it.
Because you know that only bad people will have guns in that place. Whereas in a place where it's a public place but everybody can carry, that doesn't mean you have to carry. You might not be carrying that day, or you might not even want to carry. But
yeah, I don't. personally.
Yeah, but
I know other people do. I respect that now. Like before, many years ago, I was very honestly. I don't want to, but
yeah.
If other people want to, that's their choice, you know. And I don't see it as a big deal, right?
I don't know. And I feel safer when I know other people are. Then I don't have to that day, you know. It's just so. This lady was saying, those children walked out of the school and they're fighting for their lives. Well, if they really did have to fight for their lives, and of course that's a very serious thing, then they need guns. You know, I mean, if the school is a place where you fight for your life, that's not what a school should be. It should not be like that at all. And I would not send a child to a school where I thought she had to fight for her life. That's not what I would want for her.
It's not safe if it's that I'm beginning to feel like schools are too big. Like, if we had more smaller schools where people had the, maybe, like, the private school thing. I know people are like, oh, no, that's horrible. And I used to think public schools were the best, but the more time that passes by, maybe if we just had our own opportunities to have private schools for smaller groups of people, if that private school didn't want guns, they don't have to have guns. If
right,
schools
right.
want everybody to have guns, they could do that. Maybe that's an
right.
option. I don't know. I don't have kids, and I'm not going to get involved in that debate. But I feel like it's too one-sided, and the people that are very anti-gun, I feel like that's not the only issue right now. That's the thing that kind of bothers me about that, and I feel like they're causing more fear in the children by making them afraid all the time. But that's just kind of my take on that.
Well, they're trying to make all of us very afraid, so we'll become very polarized about this. Whereas, like you said, if you don't want
you don't have to. And it's probably a merchandise thing, too, or just other, like, wanting to sell a certain, I don't know, lifestyle, or just feeling that you're right. I just wanted to get off that righteousness train because I felt like a few years ago, like when you talk to Democrat people, and I'm sorry, some of them are like, no, we're not like this, but in general it feels like this. It feels like a religion sometimes where you have to agree with everybody on everything, but then when it comes down to it, I didn't feel like people that were always pro-Democrat. Like, some people are your friends, but a lot of them say they care about other people, but I don't feel like they really do things for family or their neighbors. Like, they're not any more virtuous than anybody else, but they are feeling like they are. And I hate to say that, and the Republicans do it too, but
I'm tired
of that. I'm just kind of sick of that. And I feel like maybe some of this whole walkout thing, it's scaring children a little bit more than needed, perhaps, because there's still other crimes, like what about stabbings, like, and other types of crimes.
Right,
like,
exactly. Somebody can hit you in the head. And it always happens in the mandatory education place, you know. So I went to preschool, and it was a private preschool, and it's in Israel, you know, and everybody was really nice. We knew them. They were in our neighborhood. The preschool teacher was my mother's friend, and I only went there because it was fun. I didn't have to go. It wasn't required, and my parents didn't make me. They didn't need, you know, my mother was a stay-at-home mom, so I didn't need to, you know, be babysat, but it was just for fun to meet other kids and things like that, and nothing bad happened there. But in Israel, we don't call it kindergarten. We call it Gan Chova. And Gan Chova, you know, kindergarten is German for child garden.
Yeah, totally.
Well, Gan Chova in Hebrew means mandatory garden. And it sounds really silly, you know, if you're forced to go to this garden. Yeah,
funny.
So, and when I went there, and when you go to a place where it's mandatory to be, there will be people there who really don't want to be there. Maybe that's why they're so angry. So there was this boy, and he took a hammer, you know, it was a toy hammer, but it still hurt. He hit me on the head. Nothing like that ever happened to me in the preschool where we were all there because we were paying for it. And we, you know, we wanted to be there. And if anybody behaved badly, they would be thrown out.
You'd be thrown out. And
yeah, exactly. But in mandatory garden, you can't get thrown out. So even though the kindergarten teacher was very nice, she didn't want that to happen. But what could she do? So then she explained to me and my parents that that boy was, I'm going to say, I don't want to use bad words, but, you know, she said that he was developmentally delayed, only it was a different word, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why that happened. But I don't know why it happened, but that's, stuff like that always happens when you force large groups of people to go.
I had public school. I had some bad experiences in junior high. Like I like suppressed these a lot. When I was in junior high, I had boys that kicked me, that hit me, that threw things into me, poured things into my drinks, and every time you went to the principal, nothing would happen. Or they'd get suspended for one day. So I know what you're talking about. This school violence thing, it's not new. Like, it's not new. Like, there are other forms of violence, like gun violence. I'm not saying that.
Right. No, it can be anything and at any age.
Yeah.
And the way to keep that from happening is just make sure that you can expel anybody who isn't behaving well, and that nobody is forced to be there who doesn't actually want to be there, because that's another reason for people to misbehave.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And they know that they can. And actually, what's even worse is that some of the kids that do actually even get expelled from the public schools that they say have some developmental issues, they go to this so-called private school here in Southern California, but they got treated to trips to the LA County Fair. They got to go buy candy. And the school district was paying millions of dollars for these kids to go to this special school. A lot of them are in group homes. And the school was just so – I kind of taught here for a few weeks. It was a really bad experience. And there was one man who said they didn't even run the program correctly, because up in Northern California they had to follow the rules. But here the kids were running out of the class and they were chasing them. And then when they got tired of running, they got to go to a refocus room and they got to sit there and play games. And these are high school kids, by the way.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, they were being treated kind of – like, no boundaries. You can do what you want. And so that's how they dealt with the kids that were being expelled from the public schools here in Southern California, maybe in other states too. I don't know. And that's what the taxpayers were paying millions of dollars for this.
Yeah.
It's not good. Like, it kind of opened my mind, like, after I saw a lot of different things about how the public schools don't run very efficiently. I knew sometimes money is not used wisely, and that's I think charter schools or a private school, there's nothing wrong if you, like, honestly, nowadays, I don't know if I would want to put my kid in a lot of the public schools, like here in Southern California. That's why a lot of people do the charter schools, because of issues like this, you know.
Right. Well, all you need is the mechanism of dealing with issues, and you don't have that when it's mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the right to tell somebody not to go there when he has to go there, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you have no place to put him.
That's true.
So about the school walkout, the thing is, it seems to be orchestrated. I
mm-hmm.
mean, they're not
That's
holding
political.
These children truant, you know, normally. If a child just decides to stay home on a particular day because he wanted to play a video game or, you know, do whatever, or just didn't want to go to school because he was being bullied and nobody was nice to him at school. I mean, there are lots of reasons why you might not want to go to school. But if you stay home, the truant officer would come get you, and you might be fined and your parents might be fined, and all sorts of bad things can happen to your family. But when they all walk out together like that and nobody is fined, nobody loses out on grades for attendance, nobody loses out on an opportunity to get a scholarship or get an AP grade or whatever, it's pretty clear that the administration is sanctioning that walkout.
Yeah, they probably did. And honestly, because I know here in California, attendance is how you get the money. So I wonder, like, I would have to dig deeper into it. But I'm thinking they're still going to lose money if those kids aren't in class. Because I know that's the big, unless they just decided that day it didn't count, but I just don't think
They probably will. Here in Missouri, we have snow days. So we have a certain number of days that are set aside for snow, mm-hmm. and if it doesn't snow during those days, you get some days off. So I'm sure you have other kinds of natural disasters that you have days accumulated for.
And actually, growing up in the mountains, we had the snow days because it's 5,000 to 10,000 feet, and it used to snow more. It's starting to snow again today. Actually, it looks pretty ominous out there.
Oh, really?
Like, big, giant clouds, and the snow elevation might drop below 4,000 feet tonight. It's becoming winter-like in March, finally. But we had snow days, and sometimes we would have 3 weeks worth of snow days throughout the year. Other years we would have none of the snow days, and then we would get out early. Sometimes we went to school until June 28th because of all the snow days, having to make up for them at the end of the year. So, yeah, we had some snow days, but in the city, like in L.A. and other places, I think they don't have that. They just have they have vacation days that are planned throughout the year, so maybe they – I don't know how they plan.
Yeah, it could be that. They could subtract it from vacation days or whatever. But there could be a child who actually had a plan with his family for vacation, and that child will lose out on that vacation that he had planned because he was forced to go on a walkout, you know, on the day when the administration wanted to have a walkout in favor of gun control. And that doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, I haven't really been watching a lot of it. So, like, what if some kids didn't want to walk out? Did everybody have to walk out? Was it mandatory?
Well, somebody got in trouble. I posted it on my Facebook, and somebody said it was false news or fake news or whatever. But apparently somebody in Ohio, there was a case of a boy who said, well, I'm not walking out. I'm staying in the classroom. I want to study.
Yeah,
okay,
like
so that. He stayed in the classroom, and he got suspended for that or something
what?
Like that. So
wow. I don't think that's made up. Not everything is fake news. Like, it used to be that we thought that the cell phone was great because you could document things that happened. I'm sure that happened. He's not going to make that up. Maybe he just didn't want to go out. Okay, so in some of the schools, I didn't watch or keep up with this week, but did some of the schools, like the teachers walked out too, and they're like students? We
yeah,
all
so here's the thing. He wanted to stay in class and study, but apparently there was no teacher, and they said that if he wanted to stay inside the school, he had to go to the place where they, you know, go for detention or something like that, that he wasn't allowed to stay in the classroom. But really, if it wasn't the administration that was fostering this protest, the teachers should have stayed in the class to teach those students who wanted to learn, right? I mean,
yeah,
wouldn't you?
Of course. So? Of course they should have. I don't really understand, like, why all the teachers have to go outside, because then that's very problematic to me. I feel we didn't need to disrupt education that day to have a walkout. You can have an opinion. You could maybe talk at lunchtime or something, have like a debate like we were talking about last time, or on their own time. Could the kids maybe after school just have like a little walk or something? If they have to do that. I mean, I don't care what people do. They
sure,
have to.
If they want to protest, they have every right to protest.
Yeah.
But this doesn't
do
sound to me like a protest organized by the students. It
it's
sounds
not.
Like a protest organized by the school system.
Yeah, it's not, and I'm surprised that the teachers were leaving class to do that. That's interesting. And then that makes the kids that feel like, well, I don't want to, because I know when I was a kid, even if you're not into politics, what if you're just more of an introverted kid and you don't want to go with a big group of kids and walk around?
Yeah, that person said the boy who got in trouble said he was trying to be apolitical. He didn't want to get involved in politics.
Yeah, and now he's being punished or made to feel like he has to go to the detention room. That's, you know, I don't think he would make that up. I mean, it doesn't sound like he has a reason to make this up, and I wonder why somebody would say that that's fake news because he shared his experience. So what if something happens in the future where somebody does something who's supposed to be part of a good cause and they do something bad to someone and then somebody speaks out against it? Are they going to be told that they're fake news because they're standing
Well, I think a lot of this fake news stuff is not, you know, it's not like the National Enquirer where they have a picture of Hillary and an alien baby.
Yeah.
We all know that's not true.
Yeah, we
okay.
all know that's not true.
Right.
There's a little bit of
But this is not
story.
That kind of fake news. It's kind of like they don't like the bias of the reporters. So every reporter has a certain bias. Mm-hmm. Every paper has a certain bias. But
definitely.
That doesn't make it fake. You know, we have a right to report from a certain point of view.
Of course you do. Everybody does. But maybe they don't want people to have certain views. And it seems like, I hate to say it, what if it used to be that being, like, it was considered polite to be apolitical. But now, I know I mentioned this before, there are celebrities that are being chastised because they're not taking a political stance. And
right.
It's not a certain political stance. It's a political stance in favor of anything that Democrats say. And then if you do have a celebrity, they take a political stance. Like Susan Sarandon, she said that she wanted to vote for Jill Stein, and that was a problem because she wasn't supporting Hillary Clinton, and how dare she.
Right.
And people were saying she wasn't a real feminine. I don't, not that I care. I'm just going on. But
yeah, because Jill Stein is not a woman, you know. Only Hillary Clinton is a woman.
And I have to go a little bit there, too. One of the things that really, I didn't get as far into it with that Democrat lady, but the thing that really bothered me was, okay, they said recently that Russians are making Americans feel like independent parties have never been part of American culture, and it's always been Democrats and Republicans, and that's certainly not true because we started out with different parties, and independent parties have always had a place in the American political scene. And Ralph Nader, who, by the way, is Lebanese, so I think he's pretty awesome, Lebanese-American, you might not like all his political stances. But
no,
I
don't, but no, that's good to know about him. I didn't really know that.
Yeah, I know you probably don't like his political stances, but they're basically saying that someone like that never had support, or anybody, like Ron Paul, or anybody that was an independent person that had support, that this is all a new thing that Russians are making, like Russian espionage is making Americans feel like they have to vote third party, but third parties have always had a place in the American political.
Yes, and I don't even know why the Russians are supposed to be our enemy right now, because I thought the Cold War was over, you know.
I thought that too, and I thought we didn't want to be xenophobic. What about that word, like xenophobia? Like, I thought that was supposed to be a bad thing, and it started to bother me recently when people were starting to vilify anything Russian, and I'm thinking, there's a lot of people who are Russian. How are they going to feel? Like, if somebody says something bad about them. And then another thing, too, like, what if you're Syrian and you, I mean, I don't want to get involved in that, but maybe they support their leader. Okay, you don't like him. He's a dictator. Sorry. Like, you don't get to decide what country has what leader. I don't know.
Right, exactly.
It gets carried away after a while. It's like, are we supposed to hate people again? Like, this whole Cold War mentality, it's very childish. It really is. And
yes.
I thought we were past, well, of course we're not past that, but.
Well, I mean, I just really thought hey, didn't America win that Cold War? Aren't we friends now? Aren't we,
I thought so, too, but I thought we, I don't know, also, too, I guess because, okay, Democrats always say that they care about everybody and they like everybody, but now I'm starting to feel like some of the things they're saying sound kind of like these real people that were into the Red Scare and not liking people.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, when did they assume these personas, but 10 years ago they would have made fun of that person who had that persona.
Exactly. You know, it's just like they decided, oh, we have to either really love the Russians when they're communists, or now we're going to hate them. We have to hate them. Why?
I don't know. It's just like, I don't have time. I feel like to hate everybody. Like, I know some people hate each other and they don't like each other, but I don't feel it's healthy. And it seems very misinformed to think that you sometimes just have to let an election go, right? Like, if you're a guy or gal didn't win, you have to let it go at some point. But I feel like now, like, nobody's ever going to let it go because they didn't get their result. Well, when Obama was elected, people kept telling people who wanted John McCain, you have to let that go. But I guess they're not willing to let it go. If you voted for a third party, somehow you've magically voted for, I'm going off on the tangent again, but that's what really irritates me about this whole last election. I'm trying to stay out of it as much as I can.
But well, I got so disillusioned with everything because, you know, I was so not for either Democrats or Republicans. I got into the Austin Peterson campaign, and I thought, wow, this is a chance to go back and bring things back to the way they were a long time ago before the War of 1812, because he did mention privateers. So I was so excited about that. And then I got to the Libertarian Convention, and I was very happy that we all agreed that taxation is theft. So there I was among friends, but then they weren't such great friends, and they all went for Gary Johnson. And it was very acrimonious, you know, because Austin tried to make peace with him, and so there was a lot of, well, you know, it's politics. So
I heard the story. I don't think it was handled very well. Like, I don't really understand. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so he gave him a replica of a gun, and Johnson threw it in the garbage, and that was horrible.
Yeah, what if somebody had never found that? It seems kind of, if he didn't want it, he could have just went up to him afterwards and been like, okay, thanks, that's a nice gesture, but I'm going to give this back to you, as opposed to throwing it away, because he knew, like, it had sentimental value to the person who gave it to him. I mean, I know a lot of people, they've become disillusioned with certain celebrities when they bought them flowers. Like, I personally wouldn't buy celebrity flowers, and then they found out, oh, these things get thrown away in the trash. But you don't have to accept something, you could give it back. You don't have to throw it away. I think that was a mistake. I don't really
understand. Yeah, it was a very, very big mistake. But anyway, we still support, Austin asked us to support Gary Johnson because he was a Libertarian candidate.
Yeah.
And we all supported him. I supported him. I voted for him.
Yeah.
You know, and so it just, there was treachery on every side, and I know that if you are more on the Democrat side, then you were probably hurt by what happened with Bernie Sanders, and you know, and there are some other parties too, and so it ended up where it felt like no matter what you did, it wasn't going to turn out well.
No, it didn't. And I used to kind of be more on the Democrat side. But when I saw what happened to Bernie, and I saw all these young people that were really excited about him being just vilified and being taunted and being told that they didn't have any true political beliefs, and then these kids decided that they were going to go vote for Gary Johnson, and they were told that they were just, like, traitors. Like, somebody actually implied that they were traitors because they changed their mind politically. It made me think, these people don't really care about anybody but themselves and their agenda, and how are they any better than, you know, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Like, just the way that they were treating, like, the younger people that, you know, were kind of opening their minds to Gary Johnson. I think, actually, some people became more libertarian, some younger people. I've heard that recently. They changed their mind on the taxation issues and things like that because of the way that Bernie was treated, and then they started listening to Gary. Like, there were a few people that mentioned that, actually. So,
well, that's good. That's progress from my point of view.
So, I mean, I know you didn't agree with Gary on everything, but I know because of the way Bernie was treated and some of the younger people started listening to what Gary was saying, they kind of opened their mind. That's just what I've been hearing anyway.
Well, I hope so. I hope there will be a libertarian resurgence. And actually, even the fellow that I disagree with a lot, the vice chair of the Libertarian Party, say some good things, you know, about the walkout. I didn't disagree with him. He said to the students who were walking out, if you're walking out because you want to protest and you want to stand up for your rights, I totally support you in that. But how about you just keep walking, because you shouldn't be required to go to this school where you are disarmed, where you're a sitting target, where, in fact, you're not learning anything, where the only kind of writing they teach is literary analysis, which is the only kind of writing that will never get you anywhere, you know, in terms of a job. They're not, you know, they're not teaching you math. And even writing, you know, which they're professing to teach you, it's like, yeah, I could understand that a lot of what he said made sense on that particular occasion.
Yeah, I could kind of see in that case. And it would actually be good if they taught some maybe job-based skill writing, because a lot of people are going to go into just office jobs, clerical jobs, where they could learn how to write a document. And they actually used to have classes like that, ROP, word processing classes that had office I took one of those classes in high school. I don't know if the kids still get to take those kind of classes. That would be a good option if they had something life skills based. That I know you have a different theory, different ideas.
Well, you know, I've been expanding too. And a few years ago, when my daughter was still in high school, and she was complaining about her homework, and I wasn't necessarily sympathetic about the homework part of it. You know, but she said, you know, this is so much hard work. How come I don't get paid for it? And at first I wanted to just kind of laugh it off and say, well, because you're getting an education. But then I thought about it, and then I remembered actually that children used to have to work at that age, but at least they got paid when they worked, you know? And so now what they said when they created the free and mandatory education, free and mandatory high school, was they were liberating the children from having to work sometimes for their parents and sometimes for just for their upkeep. And they were giving them a free education so they could have a better life. But the idea was that they would be doing something that was a luxury, you know, learning, and they would be freed from the cares of doing a job. But when a child feels that they have to do their homework and they have to do it and they're not having any fun and they're not really learning anything from it because it's, you know, it's just not working, but they have to continue to labor at it and they're not even getting paid, they should have the option to quit and go work, you know?
Yeah,
or another way of looking at it is, when I went to law school, my parents paid for me to go to law school. But when I went to grad school, I didn't have to pay. It was a private university, and they wanted me, so they paid me a stipend to go and study in grad school.
Well,
that stipend actually paid for my living expenses, and not just that I had a tuition waiver.
Mm-hmm.
So there are situations in which people do get paid to learn. And if they don't want to pay a child to go to school, the child should have the option of saying, well, I don't want to go. I can get a job.
That would be, I mean, there are some kids that they probably could get a job right away, and if we just gave them that opportunity, but they want everybody to go on the college track and get a student loan nowadays, because this helps to subsidize the student loan industry.
Yeah, exactly. And then they can't even get discharged in bankruptcy. They owe money and they have to work, and they have to pay.
I was going to ask you about that. Like, I know that there's an explanation why. Why can you not discharge these student loans in bankruptcy? Is it because they're a federal loan? Is that the reason?
Yeah. So
yeah.
It was supposed to be, well, you're paying it back to the government. It's not even the government, you know?
Yeah, because a lot of people sell off those loans and they're paying to a third-party entity, but then you still can't.
Yeah, you can't discharge in bankruptcy, and you are an indentured servant until you finish paying for that.
Pretty much. And sometimes the job that you get with that college degree, it might not pay more than somebody that is just very successful. And what if they become a YouTuber or they do something with their talent? Like, a lot of young people are deciding. There actually is this one girl on YouTube. I guess she does a lot of writing and she creates different websites. And she's making, she said, $6,000 a month. She's 19. She's not going to attend college because it doesn't work for her. But she's making pretty good money. You know, there are opportunities.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but they want us to feel that the only opportunity is the college track with the student loans, which keeps us indebted. And that's unfortunate. But, yeah, so anyway, you said you were also going to want to talk about, like, the Elizabeth Warren thing.
So I thought I'd let you start because you told me earlier this week that you were thinking about something to do with cultural appropriation.
Oh, yeah, cultural appropriation. So anyway, I watched this I think it's June. I'm trying to think of the name because I want to say them right. But it's this Japanese man who married this American woman, and they were talking about the Japanese view of cultural appropriation. In Japan, it doesn't really exist. For example, they had this video that they made a couple years ago, which I thought was really interesting, that Japanese people living in Japan do not find it offensive if you wear a kimono. Like, they actually are excited that you're interested in their culture. Whereas here in the U.S., I guess this museum was banning people from taking pictures wearing kimonos, celebrating this one piece of art, because they said it was offensive if you wore a kimono and you were not Japanese, or you had to have permission from a Japanese person. So this Japanese man and his American wife were talking about it, and she asked her husband, who's Japanese, like, do I need permission to wear a kimono? And he's like, no, like, we think this is really funny. We don't understand why people who are, yes, Japanese, but they were born in America, find this offensive to be interested in Japanese culture. Because it used to be a one time that being interested in another culture, taking, like, curiosity in that was a good thing. But now if you wear anything that may be from another culture, it's considered cultural appropriation. I think it went so far as if you wore, like, clothes that had a print of something and you weren't from that culture, it was considered cultural appropriation, which to me that gets a little silly. Like, it's a little extreme. Like, so you're basically saying nobody can ever wear certain things that they might like because somebody from that. But then if you go and ask the people from that culture, they're not always bothered by it. It's usually people in America.
No, they're not. And my answer to that is, of course, you know, we all are using the alphabet invented by the Phoenicians.
Yes.
That is cultural appropriation. And
each
language has changed that alphabet. Well, you know, when I say all of us, I mean in the Western culture. Each language has made it fit to itself and changed it. But basically, that's how culture grows. You know, somebody invents something really useful, like the alphabet, and other people see it and they say, oh, wow, I want to use that. Let me see how I can make it fit for me.
Yeah, exactly. And even our numbers, like those are Arabic numbers. And
right. Yes.
Everything's changed in English. It's a very, I don't want to say a bastardized language, but a very
language. It's a Creole. It's a Creole between a Germanic language and French or old French.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a mix. And English keeps changing. And even the way that young people speak to each other nowadays, like young people around the world, they choose to communicate mostly in English, but they have a certain lingo that kind of ties them together, like a cyber lingo. I don't know what you would call it, but they kind of understand each other. Like a young child from Germany might get along better with a young child from America if they're talking online than that young child was somebody who's 68 in America. Like they would have more in common because they have this internet culture, which that is the culture of today because the kids are always on their phones and they're always talking about things on their phones. So I think
yeah.
culture is fluid. And for me, like, my ethnicity is from three different continents. Like I don't know.
Well, most of us, you know, who is pure-blooded? Who doesn't have a mixture? I mean, only Aboriginal people who stayed in a place that hasn't been touched by, you know, any other culture, only they can claim to be pure, but everybody else is a mixture.
Of course, and I always thought that was a great thing. So to me, it just seems like this cultural appropriation thing, it can get a little silly, but I kind of like what that Japanese man said and his American wife was asking him. He's like, it's nice if you want to wear a kimono or try to eat with chopsticks. Like, I think I heard something that was so extreme. Like, somebody was saying, like, if you weren't Asian, you weren't supposed to try and eat with chopsticks. Like, there was some real weird.
I lived in Taiwan. Of course, they expected me to eat with chopsticks.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, but these were people in America that were just saying some really strange, random things that they don't even really know about. Okay, you might, your parents, grandparents might have been from that culture, but they're living in America. They're just making up these rules that they think.
But I want to talk about why I think that is. But before we go into that, you know, the Japanese are masters of cultural appropriation. So their writing system is a combination that they got at least one of their writing systems from the Chinese. And Chinese is a completely different language from Japanese. But they borrowed it. And I when I taught in Taiwan, there was a young man who was brought up by American missionaries in Japan, and so he knew Japanese, but he didn't know Mandarin, didn't know Chinese of any sort. But because he had been brought up knowing Japanese, and he knew the symbols, a lot of words were easier for him to read than for the rest of us, because, you know, because of the cultural appropriation that took place in Japan. So it's that way all over the world, especially in any country that has a lot of trade with other countries. Whenever we have trade, we trade what we have to give to another, and they give us what they have, and we all profit from it. So it's all a good thing.
It's a very good thing. And the Phoenicians, they were the
knowledge right.
of that, right? Exactly.
Yes. And that was what was so wonderful about them. They didn't really want to tax anybody. They just wanted to do business, you know, and business is good. But the reason why we are now seeing this craziness, I think, is because of identity politics. So in the United States, they instituted these rules where if you belong to certain ethnicities and you have to prove it or something, then you have special status. You have special status so that you can get affirmative action. So I'll give you an example. You know, so I have a certain ethnicity, but and when in Poland, people from my ethnicity were given quotas because we excelled at academics, so they didn't want too many of us in the Polish universities.
That's
so they
horrible.
Had a quota system that said we only have so many of you, and you have to compete against each other for all the good spots, you know, and everybody else is competing on a lower level. And I can tell you that my grandparents, my father's parents, my grandfather got a PhD in philology. My grandmother got a master's degree in mathematics. And this is competing against people on a higher level, you know? So,
of course.
And so the quota system is a bad system, especially if you're a minority in a sea of people who are not doing as well academically as you are. Mm-hmm. Now, what are we doing here in the United States? They've set up quotas for certain kinds of minorities that the liberals decided are unlikely to do well in school, and so they want to help them up. So they're making it sound as though it's against Anglo-Saxons, but do you know who it hurts the most?
Well, it can hurt certain groups that they actually say have that special leg up at times, or Asian Americans, I've heard.
Yes, the Asian Americans. So if somebody is Chinese, right now they're trying to hide the fact that they're Chinese because they're afraid that, you know, that they're afraid that they won't be allowed in, that they'll end up having to compete against other Asians or other Chinese people, and not against the rest of the population. And this is what the affirmative action with blacks and Hispanics and all of that is doing. It's actually not hurting the general white population getting into school, but it's aimed really against the Asians, who are doing particularly well statistically. So it's a really bad system, and it's a system that stigmatizes the people who are in these categories, because then if somebody happens to be in this category, somebody happens to be black or happens to be Hispanic or happens to be whatever else, Native American, that they, even if they earned it, even if they're good enough to be there, everybody thinks it was affirmative action that got them there. So it's a crazy, crazy system. It's racist. It's wrong. You know, we shouldn't have to label anybody by race and ethnicity. But so what happened with Elizabeth Warren is that she used the system to say that she was Native American. And you know what? I don't care whether she's Native American or not.
I don't care either. But she did benefit, right, from...
Yeah, so she if she didn't personally benefit, the law schools that she worked for benefited, because they had to show that they had a certain number of women and minorities.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were able to check off woman, and they were able to check off minority, and they used it from 1986 to some other, I don't remember, for quite a long period of time. The universities involved were the University of Texas, the University of Pennsylvania, and Harvard University. She was a law professor. Okay? So I don't think it should matter whether she's Native American or not.
Okay.
But the thing is, the reason people get mad about cultural appropriation is they'll say, well, I'm really that, and you stole my place, you know? So we shouldn't have those categories in the first place. The law should be blind about where we come from.
Okay.
We're allowed to know. And we're allowed.
I thought we were supposed to be a society where everybody had a chance to pursue what they wanted, but those categories do kind of put us in a funny place. And the funny thing about that, the whole Native American thing is, I think Donald Trump is very obnoxious to say, like, take a DNA test. But then she was offered a free DNA test, and she said no, which I find perplexing. But I think, really, like, she should have taken it, and I think he should take it, and they should compare the results like people do on YouTube. And I don't understand,
sure.
Like, yeah, I think that would be funny, but that's not going to happen. But in her case, like, I don't understand why she declined the free test, because 23andMe is a very good test. It's not political. They're actually out of, like, the San Francisco area. I don't think they're political, though. They're just scientists. I don't know what her problem with taking the test was. I actually think it would be good, because then she would know, like, if she did have Native American ancestry. But
sure.
My guess is, and I don't want to malign her, and I'm not saying I know for sure, but if she doesn't take the test, how does she know for sure? Because a lot of people, actually, that seem to have Native ancestry, they're people from Mexico and Central American countries, and like I was telling you earlier, they always had that story in my family, like, oh, we're part Native American. But I started to doubt that quite a bit because we could never find the ancestor who supposedly was. There was no documentation, and I kept looking and looking. And then when I took the test, and everybody took the test that are supposedly the ancestors of this one person who's Native American, nobody got Native American. But my mom got, like, a few percentage points of East Asian, so, and Italian. So I kind of have a theory about who that person is. I don't think that person's Native American. But I can't really tell anybody that because they all believe that this person is Native American, and they all try to argue, like, oh, my gosh, like, this person, like, if they have some Middle Eastern ancestry, that's really coming up as Native American or Finnish. Like, a lot of people can't accept, like, that they might not have Native American ancestry.
Well, you know, East Asian, I don't know, does that include people who might have crossed the Bering Strait?
It can, but in this case, I say that it would probably be just Asian, like from maybe China, because this is the reason I'm thinking this, is because they also have that Native American component on
right.
the test, and I think it would have shown up, and there are people, like, okay, all these people in the Midwest are saying, a lot of people that say they have Native American ancestry, like, it's showing zero for them, whereas if you have people from Mexico, Colombia, many Central and South American countries, they take these tests and they get a percentage of, like, some, usually around 20%. So there are people that actually do get a fair percentage, but then people try to argue, well, American Native American tribes, they're not participating, like, they're not part of the reference panel. So they keep trying to say that because the reference panel only has Native Americans from, like, Mexico and Central and South America, that they're not showing up on the reference panel, but
I don't know. I mean, I even read this article. I may have shared it with you that said that there was this tribe in the eastern part of the United States that may not, you know, they may not have come from across the Bering Strait. They may have been Phoenicians, or they may have been something else. So,
I mean, you never know.
So that would test as Middle Eastern.
That's what some of them say too. A lot of people are citing that article, like, or similar research.
Right, but you know what? I doubt very seriously that Elizabeth Warren is going to test as having any Middle Eastern ancestry either. It just doesn't seem like it.
I don't think she is. My guess, which would be kind of funny, and turns out to be true with a lot of people that are in politics or just in positions of power or come from wealthy families like the Trumps, I wouldn't be surprised if Elizabeth Warren and Donald Trump are distantly related. I mean, don't quote me on that, but a lot of people are. Look at George Bush and Barack Obama. They're eighth cousins. Pretty much all the presidents are related to each other distantly. And I actually, which I thought was interesting, and like seventh cousins with Michelle Obama, with one of her white ancestors from the year 1700. So I had some like shared ancestors, and with Thomas Edison, like shared ancestors. Like, I'm not related to him directly, but we had like a common ancestor from the Netherlands back in the 1600s. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're distantly related and they hate each other.
That could well be. And they may not even hate each other, you know, because I always felt that when Trump was running against Hillary, they were kind of pretending to hate each other. I don't know that they really did.
Yeah, I didn't think that they did. Like, I thought that they used to be friends, and it's confusing because Bill Clinton would say, well, Donald Trump was my friend. Well, if he's his friend, then... And then look at Bush and how Clinton, like, they supposedly, those two families supposedly hate each other, but now they're, like, best friends. And so maybe nobody really hates each other, but they love to create this friction where everybody's fighting with each other.
That's how I feel it is. I think it's a show for us. We don't really know if they hate each other or not.
Don't really think that they do, and they don't hate each other to the extent that all their loyal legions of fans think that they do. And I don't want to play into that game anymore, but I guess some people really enjoy, like, following. Just not for me. That's why I listen, read some of the news, but I'm just avoiding some of the news stories because I feel like there's enough. What I don't get is how do people have time to feel like anxiety ridden about something that like horrible things that happen? Like, aren't there enough things in your own daily life and real political issues that we could be dealing with in some of these topics that they keep making issues about? But that's just my take on it. I don't feel it's healthy, but do you enjoy, like, following the news, or do you just do more libertarian, or, like...
I don't have a newspaper that I follow, or a channel that I follow on the news.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, somebody says hi and thumbs up from the Netherlands. So, hi, people in the Netherlands. thanks for tuning in. Yeah, I'm not sure they can even see me right now because I have this circle that's going back and forth there. But,
oh, yeah, are
you able to see me? Am I moving?
It's kind of digitized, like the way that your video looks. It's usually clear. And tonight it looks reminiscent of that time when you did that that meetup.
Oh, yeah.
At times.
My internet is trying to cut out. It's been doing that lately.
Oh,
and it's almost like they wait until the time when I usually go to bed and they turn it off. That's what I suspect. That's my suspicion about them.
So you have more comments, I see, something about... You have some interesting comments here.
Yeah, I can't see all of them, but I see that I have a lot of comments.
That's good.
Oh, somebody liked my grooming videos. I saw that. Okay, yeah. So the other thing that I wanted to tie in with that is Elizabeth Warren also said that she believed her family story, and she was for Native Americans, and she was going to fundraise for them. I don't remember, but, you know, like if there's an issue that Native Americans are lacking in something, she wanted to raise money for them. But really, the thing that happened was that their lifestyle was, you know, stolen from them. And the reason that happened was the people wanted their land. And so this is just something that happens to me every time I speak up in favor of the hunter-gatherer lifestyle. People come back with, keep making those, yes, I will make more grooming videos. Bo loves to groom me, so we will do that some more. But anyway, it's the same thing that's happening with chimpanzees and bonobos in Africa. We can't get them a safe place to continue with their lifestyle the way they have been doing since time immemorial. And the same thing is with Native Americans. I mean, because it seems to be like these goody-two-shoes want to come in and help save somebody from drug abuse or poverty, but they don't really want them to have access to a lot of land.
No.
And then those same people who say they want to help Native Americans, when the families around Utah that are fighting for their grazing lands, when they say that they have a contract that they're allowed to graze their cattle, people say, well, you don't need that much land. That's public land. Get off that land because we want to save it for turtles. You know, it seems to me that that is a really big problem. So the next time anybody says, I want to help Native Americans, I would like to know how they would like to help Native Americans or anybody else, really.
Yeah, I would like to know that, too. And I think I kind of know what you're talking about. Like, when I was younger, there used to be cows that were allowed to wander on the backside of San Bernardino Mountains, and we always thought they were funny. And you'd be like, oh, hi, cows. And you'd go hiking, and you could, like, visit the cows. I know that sounds funny, but they decided a few years back the cows couldn't graze out there on the public land because there was a certain type of rodent that was being somehow infringed upon that used to be indigenous at that time, but its population had declined. So they said, oh, the cows were somehow impacting that rodent, but I don't know who made that determination. I don't
know. And it's not like that, you know, in the case of the Bundys, there was some turtle, I think, that was involved in that. And in the Bundy case. And in fact, there was a study done that when the cattle were grazing there, the turtle did better than when that land was protected. You know,
interesting. And animals are fluid. Like, I think they get along with each other. I don't see how some cows. I don't even eat meat. I don't care. But it doesn't bother me if a cattle, like, is naturally grazing on land. Like, why does that I know that supposedly it hurts the turtle, but it doesn't. Like, I think they have a symbiotic relationship.
Right, exactly. They're not competing.
They're not, and animals actually get along with each other, and they enjoy each other's company. That's silly. Like, why take the cattle away? But they are making it harder for traditional cultures to practice their traditional culture. That's true.
Right, and here's the thing. They talk about the 1%. Well, really, back when all of us were hunter-gatherers, each one of us was more important than we are now, had more land, had access to more land, was able to walk thousands of miles and say, this is my land. You know, it's just like that song, this land is your land, this land is my land. That was their land. And now, if somebody really wanted to go on a walk like that, they'd end up in somebody else's property.
Yeah, you would. And then another thing that's just funny is that you would need a permit. Sometimes they were actually trying, there was a judge in San Diego who was trying to say you shouldn't have to buy this adventure pass because this is actually an issue here in Southern California. We pay taxes already for the national parks, for the state parks, for the national forest. But they were making you pay an additional fee of like $50 a year if you just wanted to park your car to go hiking. And then some of the hiking trails, you also had to buy an adventure pass just to go walking on the trail. And the judge was trying to rule that that was unconstitutional, but then they overruled him. But I still don't think that it's completely right. Like, why should you have to pay extra money just to go walking in the national forest?
Right.
I don't
think you should. I think they should not be allowed to do any of that. If something is really public, the public should be allowed to go there. And if they can't handle the public, then maybe it should be sold and made private. But otherwise, if it's public, it's for everybody. You don't have to be rich to go someplace that's public.
Yeah, you shouldn't. And there was another road. It was funny because people drive down this road all the time. It was a dirt road. It was Highway 173, the last unpaved road in California. And only people that like to drive trucks go down this road. But this one bureaucrat went down the road one day and he goes, it's bumpy and it's scary and it's really narrow in places and there's no guardrail. We have to close this road. Somebody might hurt themselves. Well, guess what? The only people that ever drove down that road were people who like to go off-roading or drove in trucks. So they actually closed the road to driving up and down because they said somebody might hurt themselves on the road. Well, I think it was pretty logical that only certain people would be going driving down that road. It was kind of funny, like the whole logic behind that. Like, you can't drive down this road because you might hurt yourself because there wasn't a guardrail and it wasn't paved. They tried to pave it. The storms would wash out the pavement every year. That's why it wasn't paved anymore. So.
Right. Yeah. No. More government. The more government is involved in something, the crazier it gets. So we need to back away.
Yeah, of course. And I've become much more open to that, because it just seems like now I feel like it's getting ridiculous. Like, are you going to need a permit in a couple years? Like, I don't know, like, to cross the street. I'm not trying to get that extreme. But
yeah, it could be that you have to get training, first of all, how to interpret a crosswalk, you know, the symbols like walk and don't walk. You should probably have to demonstrate that you know how to read that or understand it. And you would have to pay a fee to get a test. And then you would have to renew your permit to see if you still remember how to read, walk, and don't walk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see that happening. It seems like already you need, you have to get a permit for everything. Like, even to own a dog, which to me, that's a little silly. Why do you need to have a dog license? Why can't you just own a dog? And now a lot of people, they can't own pets because the pet shelters say they're not suitable parents for the pet, or they don't make enough money. And it seems like it's a gentrification of owning pets. Like, they only want certain people who are rich.
And then they start to say, well, you shouldn't have a pet unless you have health insurance for your pet.
That's ridiculous. Why does your pet need health insurance? Like, yes, bad things can happen, but what if you try to take good care of your pet? It seems like another reason to sell insurance to me.
Well, I mean, it's also another reason to prevent people who are not wealthy from owning pets, because obviously they can't afford that.
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to make certain experiences only within the reach of people who can't afford things, but yet we're this society that supposedly gives everybody equal opportunities, but a lot of people do not have equal opportunities nowadays, and I think that's why a lot of younger people became disenchanted with the Democratic Party, but they keep pumping out the same thing that they're calling you, asking you to donate $218. So I'm not old, but I'm a little bit older than the average younger person that may start, I don't vote Democrat anymore anyway, but a younger person, somebody calls them and asks them to donate that money, are they going to be naive enough to think like, oh, I need to donate that money, and they make them feel like it's some sort of, I felt like it was some sort of like war campaign, like, we need to do this, we need to fight, and I'm like, really? And I told the lady, I said, do we need to be fighting all the time? You can't just have a campaign within your own state logically. The whole thing was kind of odd. I know I'm going back to that, but
yeah, no, I wish that we didn't have to spend money in order to get the representatives that we want.
Mm-hmm. It would be more logical, but anyway, was there another point that you wanted to speak about on your list thus far?
No, I think I pretty much covered all of it, but did you have anything else?
No, I just wanted to, like, share some of those points. And I guess I'm just going to say that I find it interesting some of the things that you're posting, and I read some things that other people are posting, but in general, I don't want to argue with people. Like, I don't understand. It seems like everybody wants to argue on Facebook. I don't get that. Like, why you can't have your viewpoint. I don't understand why people – well, also, too, like, with here in the comments, like, why are people coming here getting so mad at you? You're just sharing your viewpoint. It's kind of silly. Like,
well, I don't know. Maybe I'm not supposed to have a viewpoint. And also, you know, I think somebody said that I was a false intellectual. And I, one of the impressions that I have gotten from people a lot is they feel that if you're going to be intellectual, you have to be left-wing.
No.
And if you sound kind of intellectual, or you seem intellectual, or you have a PhD or something like that, and you're not left-wing, then you must be false.
That's,
you know?
You know, that's just so ridiculous to me. It used to be that somebody was educated in a subject, and they can have their own opinion. I would be very scared if we start to live in a society where everybody has to be a certain way, and then within that group, like, it just gets more and more specific downward anyway. But you can have any opinion you want. And of course you're an intellectual. I don't understand, like, because this person doesn't agree with you, you're magically not, you magically don't have a PhD because they don't agree with your opinion. That's very, I hate to say it, it's a little childish. I'm sorry. But
yeah,
that's,
but it's gotten that way in the university, so. So it's very difficult to get along with other academics unless you share the politics that are allowed in academia.
That's interesting. I find that very perplexing. I think people are going to have to try a little bit more to have their own independent opinion. And I can tell you something about some of the politics, because in history programs, sometimes there would be a political book, and there was this one book. Oh my gosh, I was taking a Mexican history class, and there were kids. Well, they weren't kids. They were young people in their early 20s. They grew up in Mexico. They knew the history of Mexico, and they told the professor, they said, "This book is so ridiculous. This lady's just, like, spewing some sort of academic theory." They go, "We grew up in Mexico. We know the history of our country. What she's talking about doesn't even make any sense." Like, she was just saying, like, these random things about politics, and it was repeating itself, and there was no history in this book. And then the professor was like, "Yeah, sometimes people just want to sell a book, and they want to belong to a group." And he's like, "I guess I should have thought more about including this book in the reading." It was, the book wasn't very good. And finally, later, we got to read about other leaders in Mexico, and instead of this weird political diatribe, that was really bad. Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, it was just all politics, and it was nonsensical. I almost began to think, like, was this a book, or was she just rewriting the same political? It was all political theories. The whole, it was 500 pages of that, and I'm like, what am I reading? I don't even know.
Right. No, and this seeps into other academic disciplines. You know, so Chomsky is in linguistics, but he's also in politics, and so on and so forth.
Can you tell me what is the appeal of Chomsky? Because I never read him personally. I read a few things that he wrote, but I didn't really find him that intriguing or insightful. Like, supposedly he knows about history, but I didn't feel he, I feel like he makes a very broad, general, like, political, I'm not interested in Chomsky. Like, so why does he have such appeal, I guess I could ask you. Like,
well, you know, from the linguistic side of things, he basically cornered the market on linguistics, and he said that he had a theory of language that was universal. So he pretended that all languages have this underlying same grammar. Now, you know, if you know any two languages, especially from different language families, you know the grammar is very different.
It's very different. What
right.
He,
but he said there was such a thing as universal grammar, and if you go underneath the surface level, it's all the same. And it's basically black magic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he uses a lot of things that look like mathematical symbols, and to study the structure of this underlying grammar that is universal, but it's circular logic.
Yeah,
and he captured all of the linguistics departments almost.
Oh my gosh, it almost sounds like this whole thing, like this one theory that they would always talk about in history class that was called the core and the periphery. Have you heard about that theory?
Well, core and periphery is something I've heard about, but I don't know how it applies to history, so tell me about that.
I got so tired of it. Okay, they're like, basically, the third world is being drained of all the intellectual people and all the well-trained people, and all these countries are being impoverished because these talented people are being taken to first world countries. But after a while, I started to think, well, maybe people who are educated or talented want to move to a country where they have a better opportunity. They're not somehow dinging that third world country of that opportunity to employ them. If there were more opportunities in India, more people would stay in India instead of coming to the U.S. to work as engineers. And they would always be talking about the core. It's a very political kind of – when I was younger, I just would write the paper, but I realize this is a very left-wing theory, and it's kind of negative, and it's sort of belittling, I think, to people from other countries who might want to move to where they have a better opportunity. I don't think that those countries are being, like, disenfranchised of having talented people. Like, if those opportunities are there in other countries, people would stay in other countries. But they're basically saying that the first world is robbing everybody of anybody who's educated in their countries because we're greedy and we're taking those people away. That's basically
So basically it's the mind drain.
Yeah. I'm so sick of that.
Yeah.
But that core and periphery, it showed up in so many history books, and I'm like, really? I think this one chapter was just, it wasn't even about history. Somehow this person just wrote about this theory in five different ways, and I'm like, I want to start studying about the actual history of these characters and people and events, and some of those books were probably more political than I realized years later looking back. I knew that they were pretty ridiculous then, but now I'm like, it's not good.
Well, the humanities in particular have been totally invaded by left-wing rhetoric. So, you know, if somebody's studying science, if he's studying mathematics, you can get away from that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But in the humanities, we're pretty much stuck with that.
Yeah, you're right. So anyway, I'm probably keeping you longer than – I don't want to keep you longer, but I just kind of wanted to ask you if you had heard about that particular theory. I could probably find more examples. And I'm sure they're still pushing that. It's probably become even more political now. Well, the mind drain is another name for it, as you said. But Chomsky, I don't feel that he's an expert on history, and I've had people tell me that he's an expert on history, and he understands how history works, but I've never read anything. Like, I read something that some article he wrote, but he didn't seem to know anything about history, and you're telling me he's a linguist of some sort.
Yes, his claim to fame is linguistics. And almost all of the major universities use his theory of linguistics. And so rather than talking about philology and grammar and how languages develop and which languages are related more closely to other languages, they took over, and it's mostly about structure, but it's not about the structure of the actual languages. That would be good.
Yeah.
It's about how he relates them in a structure that nobody can see that's supposed to be underlying.
Interesting. So basically, I feel like he's just very good at marketing himself, and everybody has kind of bought into this theory that he's some sort of intellectual. So maybe...
Well, the other thing that he does, and this is from the primatologist side of me, the other thing that he does is he tries to justify why human beings are special. So not only do we have this universal grammar, but he thinks it's hardwired in our brains. And, you know, I mean, there's obviously evolution, but he thinks, no, we did not get it from our primate ancestors. It's something that only humans have, and it didn't evolve. Now, isn't that crazy?
That's ridiculous, and I think there's plenty of scientists. Okay, I didn't even know all these things about Chomsky, but the reason I just wasn't a fan was somebody told me once that he knows about history. Like, he has a very good understanding of history, but I read something where he was trying to, like, pretend like he was a historian, and it didn't even make any sense. Like, he was just, like, it was a political opinion, but it wasn't about history.
And well, I don't even read his political diatribes. Once in a while, I'm sure he says something that's true, because everybody does.
I'm sure they do.
But he does not impress me as a linguist at all.
Yes, okay. He's like I don't want to use that pseudo word, because I guess that's a popular word for tonight's chat, but maybe some of these people that are the intellectuals, maybe they're the pseudo ones, or they're just good at marketing themselves, and everybody's like, yes, we're going to go with that. So maybe, like, just, I don't know how you feel about this, but before we end, I just feel like maybe sharing maybe some of these political walkouts, all these protest movements, maybe there are marketing schemes for selling certain books, selling certain merchandise, selling some things that are tied to it. Like if you're a celebrity and you're anti-Trump and you get a lot of people saying, I'm part of a social movement, you're going to sell more merchandise. Like to me, I think it's very monetarily motivated. I don't think these people are virtuous and care about society.
I don't think they're virtuous and care about society. And there's so much anger. I mean, even this person who was related to me, and she started calling me a killer. And she knows the history of our family. She knows that we've had family members who were killed in the Holocaust. She knows that we had to fight for our freedom. Why would she think that if I think people should have the right to defend themselves against people who want to kill them, that that would make me a killer?
It's not good when all people do is, like, insult each other nowadays. And that's actually, it seems like, supposedly, okay, I know some people say, oh, the Trump supporters are really mean and they all say bad things, but I'm seeing a lot of from the Democrats too, like, and it used to be you could watch a comedy show. I don't watch a lot of comedy shows anymore, but you could actually listen to one and it'd be about a variety of topics. But now, like, a lot of the comedy shows, they're just about Trump, and I'm like, really? Is this what I want to spend my whole... I never followed him before he was president. I don't watch a show. But now all of a sudden that's all I'm supposed to do all day is, like, listen to him, things about him, jokes about him, like, anger about him. And I find anger doesn't really have a... It doesn't manifest in... Maybe also, too, I feel like they want people to be angry because, oh, if you're angry, like, maybe more people will become depressed. And, oh, bingo, you have to be on some sort of maybe... medication. I don't know. I'm not trying to, like, push it that far, but maybe society has a vested reason for people being angry and mad all the time. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're very distrustful of each other, and if we distrust our neighbors just because they happen to belong to a different political party or they believe something a little bit differently from us, then we can divide the entire country, and then maybe somebody can institute martial law the way Jackson did in New Orleans, and then we'll lose all of our freedom.
Yeah, that could be a possibility. And another thing, have you seen some of, like, the whole thing about the Handmaid's Tale and people are trying to somehow tie this to Trump?
Yeah, I noticed that. I did not read The Handmaid's Tale, but I know it's very politically charged and it's feminist.
I saw the movie many years ago and I thought it was very odd, but it's just like it's a leap to me. I don't like him. I don't care for him. But it seems like to me I was also thinking, this is interesting because this is a movie that's on Netflix and they're saying, like, they're like sort of hinting it's like similar to what's going on in America right now. That's a really good way to get more people to watch a movie that's on Netflix.
Yeah, well, okay, and that was supposed to tie in with the Me Too movement, was that right?
Yeah, it kind of does a little bit. It ties in with the Me Too movement because basically the whole lowdown of The Handmaid's Tale is it's a futuristic society where people have lost all their freedom and there's like these 15 men that rule the country as dictators, and their wives, if they can't have children, they procure these women that will have children, and the women are basically servants, and they have the children, but if you can't have the children, or if you're disobedient, you'll be killed, and that's what I remember from the 1980s version of the movie.
If you want to look at women being oppressed, you should watch Persepolis. Have you ever seen that?
I haven't, but is that based on the graphic novel that was written by that? Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good, and it's actually based on reality. It does show women being oppressed in Iran, but it also shows how free they were before, you know, because now we think of them as all being Muslim and all of them having their faces covered and wearing all those weird things and having basically a theocracy running the country. But it wasn't like that before.
No, it wasn't. And actually, what I've read a lot of books about Iran, actually, like by Azadeh Mohvaney. She's actually shared that the one good thing that came out of this regime was you have a lot of young people that have grown up under this oppressive culture, and they've rebelled against it. And what they do on social media is, like, they'll take off their headscarves, and they'll take pictures of themselves, or, like, sometimes the boyfriend will wear a headscarf, like, showing solidarity with his girlfriend. So it's actually made a group of people that are much more opposed to theocracy. But, yes, it used to be much better when – I guess that kind of ties into the whole thing with Syria, like, that I've always been kind of afraid to talk about. If you get rid of their dictator, which is the Ba'ath Party, and, yeah, he is a dictator, but they're a secular government, what is going to take its place? You know, like,
well, that's what happened in Iraq with Saddam. I mean, it's not that Saddam was such a great guy, but things got to be a lot worse after we went in. So,
yeah, definitely, and it's worse now, and parts of the country are – I don't want to get into it because it's so political, but there's these people, they think that the Democrats – or not Democrats, but Hillary Clinton was going to make that better, but she basically said that she was going to create a war. I'm so tired of that. Like, I know I could keep going on and on, but it seems like that's the solution every time. Like, let's have another war, and that always goes really well, right? I don't know. Or the type of war they want to have, like, that's not necessary because – we don't really need to be involved in another country's political affairs, in my opinion.
No, I agree. We don't.
Yeah. But I'm going on and on. So was there anything else that you wanted to share before we ended, or was that it?
I think that would probably be it for tonight.
Okay.
And if you
like,
I will use the podcast. I will put the podcast out on PubWages. But I can also do that editing for and just use our faces on a split screen with a podcast.
If you want to. I actually did finish the video. I just haven't uploaded it yet.
Go ahead and upload that one. But I mean for this one.
Oh, for this one. If you want to do that, sure. It's up to you. Like, I think I feel a little bit better on the editing now that I
figured
something out last night. But you can do that. For sure. I think that'd be great. Like, maybe on your end, if you wanted to do that, then you'd have your version, like, with the podcast and the pictures. And
okay.
But we can talk about it more later. And it was nice talking with all the interesting topics.
Nice talking to you. And have a good night.
Bye.
Bye.